You're listening to episode 28 of the Get Balanced podcast with Dr. Donnie, my guest, Dr. Rich Gassaway.
Welcome to the Get Balanced podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced program. Let's get started.
Retired Fire Chief Dr. Richard Gassaway is widely considered to be the trusted authority to help first responder agencies reduce human error, enhance situational awareness, and improve high-risk, high-consequence decision-making. After serving more than 30 years as a first responder, Dr. Gassaway is now a highly sought global speaker, keynote presenter, trainer, author, blogger, podcaster, researcher, and consultant on topics related to first responder safety and leadership. Dr. Gassaway received his MBA degree from the University of Dayton, and I have been teaching leadership classes in the MBA program at University of Dayton for the past 6 years, and I'm very excited to welcome Dr. Rich Gassaway. Welcome to the show.
Rich, I am very honored to have you on the show.
Donnie, I'm super excited to be with you today. Thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, you're very welcome. And Rich, if we could, I mean, I think if you're a firefighter, you know Dr. Gassaway. You've heard of his material, or you've read it in a book, an article, a magazine. I think you are the most popular speaker, researcher, author in the industry today. So,
no.
Oh, but you got a ton of work out there. I mean, a ton of work.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you.
So I'll tell you when I, you know, cause we've never met and, but I've watched your work or, you know, read about it. And when I read about situational awareness and started looking at it a little bit deeper, I was like, oh my gosh, I can relate to this, not on the fire scene though. And I'll tell you in a little bit about how I can relate to it. But, if you would, just in case if someone's not really familiar with sort of the, I like looking at that three-step development process that you have, if you could talk just a little bit about that.
Yep. That's an important jump off point because, as I talk with folks, I think that a lot of them think that situational awareness just means paying attention to your surroundings, or sometimes they'll use the term keep your head on a swivel. And that is part of it, but it's certainly not all of it. And once it's all put together as a package to be explained, then their minds really start to open up that there is a lot more to the concept and the process of situational awareness. So the three-step process is perception, understanding, and prediction. So let me put that together in a definition. Situational awareness is the ability to perceive what is happening in the environment around you, and then to understand what it means to see and hear those things that are happening around you, and to keep in mind the context of how time is passing, because as time passes, the conditions of what's happening around you change. And as those conditions around you change, then so should your awareness of those changing conditions. And then being able to accurately predict what's going to happen in the future, and to be able to make those predictions in time to prevent a bad outcome. So it's a three-step continuum of perception. That's the head on the swivel part. Understanding or comprehending the intel that you're gathering, and then being able to use that understanding to predict outcomes.
And it all happens when you're on the scene, of course, extremely at a very rapid pace.
It does. Yeah. While situational awareness has broad applications in all aspects of life, because it's the foundation for good decision-making. And it makes sense. The better you understand a situation, the better your decisions will be. So if you think about in all aspects of how you make important decisions, and various folks will define importance in different ways. Some, you know, as I think about the most important decisions, it's based on what you have to gain and lose. And if you look, if you just look down the, you know, the loss road, it'd be, you know, loss of life, injury, loss financially, a loss in a relationship, you know, whatever it is that you value that you have the potential to lose, then there's an aspect or element of situational awareness that would apply to your understanding of what is happening to help you make better decisions in the moment. So it isn't just for emergencies.
Oh, and that's what, when I read it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is somewhat similar to a method that I teach. I don't call it situational awareness. I call it, you know, self-awareness is a piece of it. But if I apply perception, gathering intel about what is happening, that's the first step of my work-life balance workshop. I call it understanding current reality. You know, so taking your situation, not on the fire scene, but into your home, into your own health, your self-care. How well are you doing with your physical self-care, your exercise, your nutrition, hydration, sleep, which we know doesn't really go very well with firefighters. But, you know, how well are you doing with your psychological, emotional care, your social care, and your spiritual care? And then the first step in the workshop is about understanding current reality. When I looked at yours as perception, gathering intel about what's happening, it's like, and that's where it's like, you know, I want people to take exactly, and I think you're saying the same thing. It's like, it's just not for the fire ground. It's to understand what's going on. And in this case, I try to apply it to what's going on in a person's health and then their family and other relationships in their life. And then we look at understanding, comprehending the meaning of it. You know, it's like, wow, is it, you know, am I doing well? Am I, you know, when I assess it, maybe I put some values on it. Where am I doing well? Where am I not doing well? And then when you mentioned about prediction, you know, anticipating the outcomes. And I think a lot of times when we look at whether it's firefighting, law enforcement, any of the first responder positions, you know how much health and wellness has been going on, not just from the fire on the scene, but how well, you know, how are we taking care of ourselves, all of that line of duty deaths, cardiovascular disease, you know, everything that is going on, the mental health, emotional health, all of that. It's all about getting more into looking at ourselves and taking better care of ourselves. And as you know, and as I know, and as most know, changing a culture is a process. It's definitely a process and takes a little time. But I wanted to share with you my definition of work-life balance, and that it's simply what the work that I do is that I ask people a question, and it is, are your day-to-day behaviors in alignment with your priorities in life? And that's where I go with people, is to try to get them to pause, like your perception, right? Gathering into, hey, what are my priorities in life? You know, and then step back and look at it and say, well, wait a minute, let me check out my day-to-day behaviors. You know, are they really in alignment? And, you know, and if not, that's where I try to guide people into making some adjustments. But if you could talk a little bit about work life, when we're talking about the health of a first responder, how important do you think it is, and has it been overlooked in, you know, many years perhaps in the fire service? You know, I know we want to stay safe, but this, how did it get so bad, if you will, or, you know, to where we have so much work to do when it comes to taking better care of ourselves, from the physical to the nutrition to the mental health? What are your thoughts on where it's been and where it's going?
I think that at least from the perspective of first responders, we can get very immersed in our passion to serve others. And in the process of that deep immersion with a focus on others, we don't focus on ourselves because we have a, what we think is a greater priority, that we're here for them, not for us. And there out there are plenty who think, well, if I would admit that I'm here in some aspect for me, then I'm going to be selfish, and I don't want to be selfish. I want to be here in the service of others. And, you know, if you, you know, I think it was, goodness gracious, was it Norman Vincent Peale that said, you become what you think about most, or one of those great sages, you know, the more you think about that I'm here for others and not for me, and if that's always your mindset, that I'm always here for others and not for me, it's very easy to neglect that self-awareness part that you talk about of being there for yourself. But the really, it's an odd dichotomy, Donnie, because the only way you can be there for others is to first be there for yourself and to keep yourself mentally, physically, spiritually healthy to be able to be in service of others. And what, and often what happens is that in giving and giving and giving and giving, we're eroding ourselves down without even realizing it and putting ourselves in a position of deficit, and we're the greatest at denying it. You know, no, I'm fine. It's all good. You know, it's weaknesses for someone else and not for me. And, you know, you talked about, you called it self-awareness, and in the classes I teach, I talk about five different awarenesses that a person has to develop. And the first awareness is the one that you speak of. You call it self-awareness. I call it personal awareness. It means the same thing, but it's that look in the mirror. And there's a reason it's number one of the five, because you have to first have that tremendous self-awareness and development of yourself for have the other four come into alignment. And so often responders, and folks that are not first responders put the service of others ahead of making sure that they're the best that they can be. And they sometimes feel guilty about it. Like, oh no, I can't be selfish and put myself first. We're here for them, not for us. And they take it to an extreme. And that's where, you know, obviously anything, once you take it to an extreme, can have a detrimental impact.
Yeah. Hey, will you tell me about the other four?
Yeah. So the first is personal awareness. The second is team awareness. That's the awareness, having an awareness or an intelligence about the other members of your team, their strengths, their weaknesses, you know, what challenges they're facing, how we can help them to be better. The team awareness really has to do with, you think about, like, you know, the chain, and the weakest link in the chain will cause the chain to break, and having an awareness of who on the team is a weak link and how to help shore them up to be strong. The third awareness is the resource awareness. And that's the awareness of everything that we depend upon that isn't human. So any, you know, knowledge, tools, equipment, anything that we need to be good at whatever our craft is, that isn't human, and knowing intimately all of that and how it works and integrates into what we do. The fourth awareness is the actual scene around us, you know, the awareness of what's happening in that space where we're working. If it's a fire scene, it'd be, you know, on the scene of the fire and what's happening on that incident. So, you know, you maybe call that environmental awareness. And then the last one, and this one is difficult because it's rooted in communications. It's shared awareness, making sure that whoever you're working with is on the same page of understanding as each other. You know, because if one person is playing off, if one person is working off one playbook, and another person is working off of a different playbook, and then they have to come together and play together, it's not going to be compatible. There's going to be conflict. There's going to be error occur. So having that shared awareness of in the military, they would, with your military background, you know, they call it common operating picture of the strategy, tactics, goals, and that everyone is aligned. So essentially, metaphorically, rowing, everyone's rowing the same boat in the same direction.
Yes. Yes. Have you ever tried to apply those to a family in a, like an analogy? Because I'm reading that and I'm going, wow, personal team awareness are your family members, right? Your resource awareness, your home, your, the money you have, you know, your income, your, all those type of things, your environmental, maybe that's part of that home. Yeah. But, and then the shared awareness, you know, when I think about, and sometimes, I mean, I just get some ideas and I go off on sometimes some ideas, Rich, but I'm thinking shared awareness. I've talked to and interviewed and, you know, research and stuff. As you know, so many firefighters, they have that long night shift, that long 24-hour shift that they didn't get. They got little to no sleep, but then they go home. And then a lot of times they're expected now to take over and start watching the kids. And, you know, there's these things that expectations versus I'm thinking of almost like that, boy, if there was a shared awareness, because I try to coach some of them that, you know, if you can talk to your spouse about, hey, I need at least this much sleep, you know, like, and since this is all audio, I shouldn't be doing all my hand gestures, but you know, I need at least, you know, I need to get 4 to 5 hours of sleep because I did not sleep last night. So I'm home. That it's critical because, you know, because what happens, most of them just punt that away. I forget it. Grab the caffeine, the sugar, and march forward. And I'm thinking, wow, that shared awareness, that is something that could be so helpful. I don't know. That's just that, those thoughts rolling out of my head and out of my mouth.
Well, I think in what causes some problems in the fight in the family dynamic is that the we'll call it the civilian half of our family that is not serving doesn't really understand and therefore maybe does not have an appreciation for what is happening at work. So for example, the spouse comes home from working a shift and their significant other says, so how was work yesterday? Oh, fine. Did you have any calls overnight? No, we didn't have any, we didn't turn a wheel. So their interpretation is, oh, you got a good night's sleep. Well, I'll tell you what, I always slept with one eye open when I was in the firehouse because one time I slept through an alarm. And that's all it took was one time sleeping through an alarm and somebody coming in and rousting me because I didn't hear the alarm go off. And from that day forward, I never slept well in the firehouse because I never wanted to sleep through an alarm. And I don't even know what, you know, how I could even sleep through an alarm. It's loud, but somehow I did. And so even though someone might be in bed all night on duty, doesn't mean they're getting sleep or restful sleep. And it's very likely that they could come home very fatigued and therefore, you know, grumpy. And that the significant other and the kids might not understand that because they think, oh, you know, you slept all night, especially if the, maybe the significant other at home is taking care of children who might be up during the night. And they're thinking, I was up more during the night than you were. I was up two times with sick kids and you got to sleep all night. And, you know, there can be a real disconnect in that shared awareness, that shared understanding of really what's really happening in the work environment.
Yes, very good points. Well, let me shift and turn sort of the focus on you a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about the other hats you wear besides your professional hat, married, children, et cetera?
Oh, yeah. I've been married to my I always introduce her as my first wife, keep her on her toes. We've been married 36 years, and we actually met in the fire service. So when I joined my hometown volunteer fire department, my wife was already on the fire department. And then we served together, both in fire and EMS. They were two separate organizations. So we were members of both organizations and served together for 10 years. And then when we started the family, she stepped away from it, and it just continued to be my career. And honestly, Donnie, I think that really has been critical to the success of our family dynamic, because she really understood it from the inside out as to what it's all about, and the stresses and the pressures and the demands. And so when I would come home and talk with her, I didn't get a deer in the headlights. She really understood what was happening in my work environment. But we have four kids, and my oldest is a career firefighter in Madison, Wisconsin. And has been there for maybe 6 or 7 years after serving in the Marine Corps as an aircraft crash fire rescue. He started as a junior firefighter on my department that I was the chief of. And once he, I mean, I think probably from the first drill, he knew, I knew this was all he was ever going to do, and is be a firefighter. And he absolutely loves it. He's married. I have two grandkids from he and his wife. And then I have a set of twins that are now 26, and neither of them are firefighters. My daughter works for a medical a company that makes medical devices, and her brother is an electrical lineman. And then I have my youngest is 20, and he is working for a manufacturing company here in Minnesota.
Oh, wonderful. Do you get to see him very often?
Yeah, actually, the youngest still lives at home, so okay. Get to see him every day. And you know, the hardest one to get connected with is the firefighter, because he lives 4 hours away. And then my son, who's the electrical lineman, COVID caused him, because he was in an apprenticeship program, which is essentially a student lineman. He got laid off from downturn in work from COVID. So he actually moved back home, and he's just, I'm going to guess sometime within the next several weeks is probably going to be back as a lineman again. He's got a couple hot leads on jobs, and then he'll be out again. But he was living in Colorado. So I only saw him in, I don't know, a couple times a year when he was living there. But he's been back here now since mid-September. So, and, you know, the jobs he's applying for will have him move away again. And then the youngest, his job is right here in town. So I don't know if he'll like go out and get his own place, or he'll, you know, just continue to live. I got a 5-bedroom house, so I got plenty of, he can live in a area of the house that I don't even have to see him often, which I think makes him happier than me. But, I love my kids. I love having them around. I love doing family stuff. Even just something as simple as having the whole family together for a meal is a big deal for me.
Talk to me a little bit about that, if you would, Rich, about when your kids were, you know, in the school age time frame, you know, whether it's, you know, middle school, high school years and things like that. You were probably a chief at the time.
I was. Yeah. I was a chief for as long as my kids can remember.
Okay. And then when did you finish your PhD?
About 5 years before I left the fire service and started teaching classes. So, well, I started it 5 years before I left. And then once I got my PhD, the number of opportunities to present on the topic and on my research overwhelmed me so much that I had to leave my fire department job, because I was working two full-time jobs and it wasn't working. I mean, it was, talk about a period of time when I was being unfair to my family. I was never home. Because if I worked Monday through Friday, I was getting on a plane going somewhere on the weekend. Or if I worked Monday through Wednesday, I took vacation Thursday and Friday and went somewhere and did a program. And that just was not sustainable. And I was just holding on white knuckle until I could get the years of service to be able to retire. I wanted to get 10 years in the organization that I was in. So when I crossed over the 10-year mark, I stepped away. And so it took from 5 years before I left is when I started. That was in 04. And then I left the fire service in 09 after 33 years of service. And I really wouldn't have called it retirement. I would have called it transitioning because I, you know, went on and picked up a new career. Yeah. And did that. Did that robustly for from 09 until the pandemic hit, which kind of put a screech on live programs. I do some virtual things, but in 2019, before the pandemic, that year of 2019, I flew 192,000 domestic air miles giving presentations around the US and Canada. And then on March 12th of 2020, I was in Maryland when I got a call from my office manager that said the program that I was supposed to go to from the program in Maryland, which was in Oregon, that it canceled. And then the program that I was supposed to go to from Oregon in Washington State, it canceled. And I'm like, what's going on? Well, they had declared a national emergency because of the pandemic, and that immediately shut everything down. And I flew home from Maryland on March 12th, and I haven't been on an airplane for business since then. Wow. To this day. No. So anything I do now is virtual, but it's far less in the number of programs than when I was doing live programs of 90 to 110 a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm getting back to doing my first live program in about a week and a half.
Oh, outstanding.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. I had 46 programs that were scheduled in March that all of them postponed. Some of them rescheduled for the fall. They've since postponed. Some of them rescheduled for the first quarter of 21. They've all postponed. Mm-hmm. So my first live, if it goes off, my first live event is going to be in April, if it happens.
Yeah.
So it's been crazy.
It has. Well, take me back when you were the chief and your kids were growing up. You know, as you said, they always knew you as a chief.
Yeah.
Talk to us. What kind of a dad were you? Were you hands-on? Were your kids involved in athletics or different types of activities? Did you try to make it to those? What was your role as a father in your family?
Yeah, that was very important to me. Because I live in a town where I was the chief, it was both difficult, but yet also accommodating to be there for their events and activities. The job was extremely demanding in both energy and time, because we were a combination department with mostly part-time and volunteer staff. That meant a lot of evening and weekend meetings and trainings, because you can't do that during the day because those people are at their full-time job. So I had to be there during the day for the administrative stuff. And then a lot of times for the evenings and weekends for the trainings and meetings with the part-time staff. And, that created a lot of demands for time. And, but I was able to be home and able to attend their scholastic and athletic events. All of my kids were very active in sports as kids. And then when they got in high school, they were all swimmers. And so there's a lot of to and from swim practices and to and from swim meets. And I made it a priority to be there to be part of that. That was a big deal for me. Where it really got challenging for me, Donnie, is when I was in the PhD program, because I was also working full time and then now going to school full time, essentially full time.
Mm-hmm.
And so for that, the baseline program, you do your schoolwork and then you do your dissertation. Well, during the schoolwork, there's a lot of reading that has to be done. And I would find myself going to my kids' events with my school books. And so we would be at a baseball game and I was there physically, but I was reading and highlighting and taking notes. I swear to God, all the other parents had to think that I was the biggest nerd they'd ever seen. Cause just about every time they saw me, I was face down in a book. And then I would tell my wife, well, let me know, my one son's Jordan. Let me know when Jordan's up the bat and I'll be reading. He's up the bat. And I'd close the book, say, go on, Jordan, get a hit, and then I'd watch the game for a 2 minute period. And then back into the book, and if we went to a band orchestra recital for the junior high before it started, I was reading the articles that you print out, just going through them, highlighting.
Oh yeah.
And I often joked with my wife that all the other kids' parents have to think that I'm like super nerd. And my one son was having some challenges in, I think it was sixth grade, and we went in for the parent teacher conference, and the teacher said to me, she said, well, it's been proven statistically that if kids, especially boys, if they see their father reading, then they're more likely to read also or enjoy reading. And I told her, I said, if I read anymore, my eyeballs are going to fall out of my head. And of course, she didn't know, that I was in school. And so I told her what my reading regimen is like. And she said, okay, we can check that off. That's not the problem. I said, no, maybe he just doesn't like reading. And so there were challenges when my kids were growing up, for sure. As far as being able to be there as much as I wanted to be, I guess I would let my kids stand in judgment of whether I was there enough. I'd like to think that I was, but I know that my wife carried a big part of the load as well, with four kids and, two of those four twins. When my oldest was two, my wife had, we had the twins. So we had a 2-year-old and a set of twins. And to give you perspective, in the midst of that, I was enrolled in the executive fire officer program at the National Fire Academy. And the twins were about 6 weeks old. So he's got a 2-year-old and twin 6-week olds. And I'm scheduled for my next, the National Fire Academy executive fire officer program is a 4-year program. And you're on a schedule to go, 2 weeks a year for 4 years, and my schedule time come up, and I said to my wife, well, should I go or should I not go? And she's like, no, I'll go. Everything will be fine. Like, oh gosh, she's so saintly.
Yeah.
So I go to the National Fire Academy, and I'm there, but like day four of the 2 weeks. And I call home to see how things is. She was carrying a basket of laundry down the steps, slipped on one of the steps, fell, broke her ankle.
Oh.
So now she's got a 2-year-old, 6-week-old twins and a broken ankle. And I said, okay, I'm coming home. She's like, no, don't come home.
Oh my gosh.
She said, it'll be okay. I can get through it. And that's just the kind of resilient woman that she is. And if she weren't that way, it probably would have created more stresses and more challenges. But she's really independent and really organized, and that has been a tremendous asset to our relationship and raising our kids. And of course, they're all adults now, so that mm-hmm. that isn't an issue anymore. But my wife and I always had, after we had four kids, we always had a running joke that if either of us decided to leave, whichever one left had to take all four kids. So it made it easy to stay together, because we neither of us wanted to be saddled with all four kids alone. So you know, we joke that that's what kept us together.
That is funny. That sounds like you did marry a saint there. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Well, hey, take me when you said, I heard earlier when you talked about that things got really hectic is when you start after you finished your PhD and started that traveling. But you needed to get across the finish line, as you mentioned, that 10-year mark. But, you know, sometimes people don't, they know that they're out. I mean, did you know you're like, wow, things are out of balance here? I mean,
Donnie, I knew it. I was intimately aware of it. But I was in a good place and a bad place. In a good place in that the demand for the situational awareness decision-making programs was growing explosively. And I mean, a situational awareness person who's supposed to be able to predict the future, I did not predict the future of that. I had no envisionment just how popular that topic would be. So I thought my plan was I'd graduate and then I'd just work and do a program here or there and do a little bit of writing and, you know, coast into my sunset at the fire department and, you know, go on and do, you know, my afterlife career. And it all happened too fast for me, that the ramp up of that post fire service career, instead of being a gradual incline, was more almost like a vertical climb. And I struggled to tell organizations no, because I knew that what I was teaching could save lives in their departments. I knew it. And I think they knew it, for those who had attended conferences and heard me speak. And so when they wanted a program, I, instead of saying no and maintaining some form of work and life balance, I said yes to just about all of them while trying to balance family and balance full-time work. And that last year was really quite the blur in my life. In fact, I remember so little of it. I remember the start of that period and what it, how exciting it was to have some interest in my topic. And then there was a long period of a blur. Anyway, it wasn't a blackout, but I just don't have much memory of it. And then to the end, because my wife and I are, you know, making the decision and the plans as to how to transition out of full-time fire service. I mean, it was time. It was 33 years in the business. It wasn't like I, you know, was in it only 5 years and walked away. And then, you know, the plan for how to make speaking and consulting a business. Because it was kind of a business, but it wasn't my only, you know, because I was still working full time. You know, every time I went to the pigeonhole, there was a piece of paper there with some numbers on it that meant I had a paycheck. But once I walk away from that, well, now I had to generate all my own livelihood. And there was a considerable amount of doubt among both my wife and I as to whether what I was doing and the track that I was on was it sustainable. You know, would the demand for that topic just wane, or would it continue to be robust? And it was scary to think that I would, you know, potentially starve out by not having, you know, any work, and then have to go find a job again, which I'm completely sure I'm employable, but, you know, I had set myself on the track to do that new career. It just happened. If I had to look back, I'd say it happened too fast.
Yeah.
You know, which again was good and bad.
Yeah. I want to back you up on something because you said it quickly, and it's actually, there's a ton of wisdom in this and power. Your words were, my wife and I were working on making the decision. The key there is your wife and you. You included her.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been a team the whole yeah. way. I don't we make all of our significant life decisions jointly. We some will call me a nerd, but my wife and I sit down every month, and I don't mean like occasionally we miss, I mean religiously. We sit down every month at the start of the month and make a budget of how we're going to spend our money for that month. And it's not to be restrictive. You know, if she says, well, I want to go buy a new dress. Yeah. We just put it in the budget. Mm-hmm. Or I say, I want to buy a new fishing pole. We just put it in the budget. But that budgeting every month, not to turn this into a financial discussion, but that budgeting every month greases the wheels for a lot of conversation and a lot of discussion about well, what's going on, what's upcoming this month. Like right now, you know, like for example, if we just a week or so ago did the budget for February. And so are we going to go visit my son in Madison? If we are, then we need to budget some extra money for gas for the trip down and back, budget some extra money for restaurants because we'll probably order some takeout and have some, you know, restaurant meals at their house. And mm-hmm. again, it's not to be restrictive, but as we have those conversations, then that helps us to look at our planning, our priorities. You know, not too many things that you can do in life doesn't have some financial connection to it. So the budgeting every month gives us a chance to have a lot of conversations about what we're going to be doing, what's important. And, I was taught a long time ago, Donnie, if I have a happy wife, I'll have a happy life. Yep. And while it's cliché, there's a lot of truth in that. Keeping the relationship just that, a relationship, you know, and that relationship rooted in communications develops trust. Where I talk about, you know, this mountain, the bottom of the mountain is communications, halfway up the mountain is relationship, and the peak of the mountain is trust. And we're all trying to climb to the peak of the mountain, which is trust. Well, it starts with communication, and repetitive communication builds relationship, and long developed relationships builds the trust that then allows you to accomplish just about anything you'd set out to do. And my wife works in my business. And in fact, I call her the CEO, and she takes care of all the administrative aspects of my business. She does all of the correspondence, all the contracts, all the billing, which again, then involves her intimately in what I'm doing as far as, you know, plans and travel and, you know, she gets to pick, well, I'm going with you on this one, on this trip. And she does on occasion, you know, pre-pandemic, come along with me to the places that would be, you know, she would deem to be fun or interesting for her to be a part of. But,
yeah,
you know, we've been a team connected at the hip for forever. And to think that I would even entertain a decision of any magnitude without her involvement just is inconceivable to me.
Yeah, that is, I enjoy hearing that, Rich, very much. Let me pivot over to, you had a had a successful, healthy career as a firefighter, EMT. Mm-hmm. How did you take care of yourself, your physical care? You know, did you continue to, did you exercise? Did you try to do the right things? Did you try to eat the right way? I mean, how did you do it both from a physical standpoint? And then how did you manage through the emotional components, the trauma events and all of that in your career? What's the key?
The physical part was not something that I made a high priority for the biggest part of my career. Unfortunately, I was a very active person, active in sports and active in just as a person, active but I wasn't a person for a period of time. I got on a working out kick and I enjoyed it, but I kind of lost interest in it as well after a period of time. And I achieved the goal that I wanted to get to as far as fitness, and then I kind of lost interest in going to the gym at 5 a.m. 5 days a week, and so that part has kind of had its ups and its downs for me. And I forgot the second part of your question.
How about your how did you handle the trauma events in that healthy?
I'm very fortunate that I have not been a person who has been affected in traumatic ways from traumatic events. And I don't know that there was any special training that I had that set that up for me. One of the earliest lessons, I guess, if I could call it a lesson, was the very, I trained to be an EMT, and we do, all the training and the CPR and everything on mannequins. And then I went on my first real life cardiac arrest call. And I was mortified. The person was in cardiac arrest. They were on a couch, and the person in charge of our crew said, "Let's get them onto the floor." So I'm pulling this person onto the floor, and I started out with airway, and someone else was doing compressions, and the crew leader clearly could see my angst, I believe.
Yeah.
And he bent down and cupped his hand, and this is going to sound bad, but it had a very righteous intent. And he whispered in my ear, "Rich, relax. You can't kill a dead person."
Yeah.
Because it was almost like he was reading my mind, that I was thinking, if I get this wrong, this person's going to die. Well, yeah. They're in cardiac arrest. They're essentially biologically already dead. We're just trying to do our best to reverse that course. Yeah. And we know, we're taught that, at least at that time, we're talking almost 40 years ago, the probability of successful cardiac resuscitations was extremely low. So, don't get your hopes up that you're going to have a lot of victories in that arena, because you're going to have more that you don't save than you do save. In fact, in my whole career, I only ever had two saves in 33 years.
Yeah.
But I have seen a lot of trauma, a lot of bad things happen to people along the way. And I feel very fortunate that my brain has found a way to lock those experiences away so that I don't have to re-experience them. It's funny we're having this conversation, Donnie, because a friend of mine who just visited my hometown, our hometown, and he sent me a text message of a picture of an intersection. And he says, every time I come past this intersection, I can't help but remember that accident where that pickup truck went airborne, hit a utility pole at the cab level, wrapped the truck around the utility pole, and the guy was still in the truck and he was still alive. And this person that I was chatting with said to this day that sticks in his memory as one of the most challenging, complex extrications of a live person. And we had he reminded me, I was in charge of this incident. He said, you know, Life Flight Clank came in and it had to wait because we had to, the extrication took well over an hour to get this person out of this entanglement. And he was going on and he says, and do you remember this? And do you remember this? And I had to reply back and say, I'm sorry, I hardly have a memory of it. I do remember there was an accident there, but I couldn't tell you that it was a pickup. I couldn't tell you how long the extrication took. I didn't remember that Life Flight came.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm on the cusp of having, you know, dementia or Alzheimer's here. I have a pretty good memory about things, you know, for somebody at my age, but I just hardly had any memory of it. And that's how it is with a lot of incidences. I'm talking with people and I'm like, do you remember this? You know, I remember a lot of things about situations with my kids and family and vacations, but those emergency calls, it's not some skill that I have, just my brain has found a way to safely tuck them away so I don't re-experience those like people that have post-traumatic stress injuries have happened. And for that, I'm fortunate. I that's probably one of the greatest blessings of having served as a first responder is one, I haven't had post-traumatic stress, and two, I haven't had occupational cancer.
Yeah.
And I am thankful for those two blessings every day of my life.
Well, Rich, it certainly sounds like you have a potential new topic for some research that you could start on.
Thanks, Donnie.
Why that brain of yours has the secret. If you could figure that out, I think that'll keep you busy for the next 10 years.
Absolutely, it would. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, let me shift over. And as we're winding this down, I'm always curious about, I like asking the question, what are your guiding principles in life and where did they come from?
Well, the principle of being in service of others was instilled in me very early. In fact, we didn't even talk about how I got into the fire service. I had no interest in being a firefighter whatsoever. I mean, when I was in high school, a fire truck could go down the road and I wouldn't even turn and look at it. Even with its siren on, I didn't care. I had no interest in it.
Oh, yeah.
But then we had a fire at my house and the fire department came and took care of the problem was a chimney fire. But what happened there was they took care of my family. And that left an immediate impression on my heart.
Yeah.
Of how it feels to be cared for in a moment of crisis by someone who's a stranger. Yeah. And I immediately said, that's what I want to do. I want to be in service of others. And it's interesting that I went from having zero interest to being completely consumed by that. And I literally went the next day to put an application in, and that was in January, and they said, finish high school, then come back. And I was an agonizing 3 months waiting for that opportunity. And as soon as I graduated from high school, I put my application in, I joined right away because I wanted to help others when they're the most vulnerable to feel safe. And it was almost like trying to take that feeling that was instilled in me on that night in January and to do that for other people. The concept of paying it forward has been huge for me. It's been a guiding principle for my whole life. And then when I saw the movie pay it forward. I went, that's it. I mean, I don't know that I'd ever really used the term pay it forward, but I truly believe in the karma of that. If you do good things for other people, then good things will come to you. And I go out of my way to do that with intentionality. Not with the belief or the, not with the goal of, well, if I, you know, if I give $2, then $4 will come back to me. It's not that clear cut of a motive. It's more like if I do something that makes someone feel good, then two other people are going to do something that's going to make me feel good. And in the end, that's a lot of great karma.
Oh, yeah.
Of feeling that you helped somebody or that somebody helped you. Now, I will tell you, there's a downside to this. There's something called the law of reciprocity. And the law of reciprocity says, essentially, whatever someone does to you or for you, you feel an obligation to pay them back. Now, that can work to the good or the bad. So, like, if somebody kind of screws with you, you feel an obligation to kind of put the screws back to them. You know, that's the law of reciprocity. But if somebody does something nice for you, then you feel this obligation to do something nice for them. And I'll give you an example of this. I was teaching a program in Terre Haute, Indiana.
Yeah.
And we were supposed to get it was a week-long program. We were supposed to get a really big snowstorm. And my co-instructor and I debated, you know, should we cancel the class? Well, we only have 5 days with the students and we had a lot to cover. So we said, oh no, we won't cancel the class. They're all first responders. They're used to getting to work in big snow, you know, but I had a rental car, you know, that wasn't four-wheel drive or anything. And sure enough, we got about 6 inches of snow overnight and we get up in the morning and we're at the lobby of the Hampton Inn. And we're having the breakfast. And I said, I'm going to go out and clean the car off and warm it up. And I go outside and my car is already cleaned off. The windows are all cleaned off. Headlights all cleaned off. And like three cars down is this guy that's cleaning off all the cars.
Really?
And I'm like, who is this person? And what are they doing? So I wasn't sure if he cleaned my car off. I just saw him cleaning a car off and I watched him for a minute and then he went to the next car. So I had to go up to him. Well, first of all, I snapped a couple of pictures of him doing this because I was pretty impressed. And I said, who are you and why are you cleaning these cars off? And he gave me his name and he said, I work here. He said, I'm the custodial person for the Hampton Inn. And he says, it's just my way of showing a random act of kindness to clean off the cars for our guests who stay here when we have a snowstorm. I said, so management asks you to do this? And he's like, no. He said, I come in early before my shift is supposed to start and I do this for people. He said, normally nobody sees me do this. He said, they just come out and their cars are clean and it's a big mystery to them as to how that happened. He said, you just happened to catch me at it. So I was so impressed with this that I went in and asked for the manager, got the manager, asked her to give me his full name, and she did, and I got her name. And then I posted those pictures on my social media of the awesome service that I got from the Hampton Inn in Terre Haute. Yeah. And I tagged Hilton Corporate on those social media postings. I put it on Facebook, Twitter, and maybe Instagram. I don't remember if it was Instagram, but definitely Twitter and Facebook. And I posted on there this message about this guy and what he did for me. And we went off and did class.
Yeah.
So I get back from class. I go to my room. I open the door. And there is a gift on the dresser attached to some balloons that are, you know, helium filled floating balloons and a card. And I'm like, I'm in the wrong room because, you know, I'm out of town. Nobody knows, you know.
Yeah.
So I look at the room number on the door real quick and I'm like, no, it's my room. So I go in and I open up the card. And I Donnie, I still have this card.
Yeah.
To this very day, I still have the card. And it was from the custodian who said, thank you for the kind words that you shared on social media. Thank you for letting corporate know. He had gotten a call from somebody at corporate commending him for what he had done, what he does for his customers.
That is
and awesome. I thought this, so his random act of kindness led to me doing an act of kindness, which then invoked the law of reciprocity, which caused him to do an act of kindness. And the gift that he gave me was just a little basket of some things from the little like snack shop at the Hampton, you know, what they have, you know, the crackers in the like a protein bar and a can of soda, you knew where it come from.
Yeah.
And, but then I felt beholding to him. Okay. Like he did something for me. Then I felt like I needed to do something for him. Then he felt like he needed to do something for me. So then I'm like, no, I got to do something for him. I can't leave town in a deficit here. So I went to the Target and I put together a basket of like, I don't know, call it dude stuff, you know, stuff that I thought a guy would like to have. And I put this basket together and I'm like, I'm going to leave this for him. But then I got smart about it and said, no, I'm waiting until I check out. Because if I do that before I check out, then he's going to do something else back for me and I'm going to be in debt again. And I don't want to be the one in debt. I want him to feel the guilt of having, you know, not done the last thing. So I put that basket and card on my dresser in my room on the morning that I checked out. And that was it. And then he got my home address and he sent me another thank you card. And I'm like, oh, darn you. But you know, that whole concept of random acts of kindness, paying it forward, being in service of others have been really, truly driving principles. And I, if I had to tie it back to a downside, Donnie, that's part of probably what caused me to have some challenges when I was trying to do both careers. Is because those folks looking for situational awareness training were people that I felt in service of that I needed to be there for.
Yeah.
And you know, that created that conflict in my personal life suffered some. My family, you know, if I ever said there was a point in my life where I kind of derailed off of my family principles, it was that blurry year when I was trying too much to be in service of everybody else and not so much in service of my family.
Yeah. Oh, I love your story though, too, by the way. That's a great one. Let me ask you on from a spiritual perspective, like spiritual wellness or religious, anything like that. Has that been a part of your life?
Yes. I've always been a spiritual person. I believe in God. I pray. In fact, just on my social media, I had just recently posted a conversation that I had with God. I was said some things worrisome on my mind. And I literally woke up in the middle of the night and had a conversation with God about these conflicts and challenges of some things that I was struggling with. And then I felt compelled to share that conversation and what I had said and what I had heard him say back to me. But being connected to a higher being, a higher purpose that I am in service of, is truly at core of the whole concepts of random acts of kindness, paying it forward, being in service of others. Really, it's to live a life that is noble in spirituality. Not to say perfect. Oh gosh, no, yeah. Far from perfect. But to realize that you know, everything I have in life is just on loan. You know, was provided to me by blessings from my Creator. And I'm just the steward of whatever it is that is provided to me. And that I don't force my religion or spirituality onto other people. I'm friends with people who have no spiritual beliefs and we get along fine. I have friends who have beliefs that are different than mine and we get along fine. You know, it would be against my beliefs to be judgmental of people who have different views. You know, they can have their views and we can, that's part of the problem with social media. People think if their views are different, we can't be friends. Well, no, if our views are different, we can be friends that just have different views. And so
that's
that's
not allowed today.
Yeah, I know. It's an odd thing. You know, what I know about, you know, my PhD research was in cognitive neuroscience. And what I know is that once we've made up our mind, it's very difficult to unlock those beliefs and to change them. Then the mind is very stubborn toward the beliefs that we lock onto. And that's really the foundation of the challenges of differences in beliefs of especially religion and politics, is that once a person believes whatever they believe, it's going to be extremely difficult, if not impossible, for someone to change their mind. You know, there's a saying that says a mind convinced against its will is of the same opinion still. You can try to convince someone's mind against what their will says they believe, and you'll never be successful at changing whatever is their strong belief. And that's what people are always trying to do on social media, is like, no, if I bash person X, you know, vigorously enough, you'll change your mind and like my person there. And it's interesting, you know, from a social psychology perspective, it's so interesting to observe what is happening in the social media world, because people feel insulated and empowered when they can be anonymous behind their computer or their iPhone.
Yeah.
And it gives them a sense of boldness to say whatever's on their mind. And but back to the spirituality, I do have strong beliefs, that's just part of our my wife and I's principles, is that we and our kids too, but you know, mm-hmm. all are believers in a higher being. You know, we sit down to have dinner, we say prayer. You know, and I'm talking to God every night when I go to bed. And you know, and not to say that's for everyone, and I'm not trying to convince anybody to do what I do. That's just what works well for me and helps to keep me grounded.
Yeah. No, very, very nice, Rich. Very nice. You know, I mentioned at the beginning of the show I think I mentioned it before we started recording. My son, he just turned 23. He's people that listen to the podcast probably get tired of me saying this, but he's an 82nd Airborne Afghan war vet. And interestingly, I'm learning more and more. He's been back now for over a year, because when he was over there for a 9-month doing his missions, he would call me. And I'd ask him, you know, well, what kind of things are you doing? He goes, oh, we just escort people in for some, you know, private meetings. And then, you know, the other party, they have their, you know, their guards with them. And, you know, nothing much. I lift a lot of weights. I do this, I do that. I'm learning more and more that he didn't tell me the truth. And he came out and he says, well, I didn't tell you the truth on purpose. I didn't want you to worry. And I'm learning all about still learning about the different missions, the real stuff that had happened. And, but very proud of him. He came back healthy and safe and all of that. And he's studying to be a firefighter, and hope he's getting his first part-time, because he's got his fire one. He's getting his first part-time job. He goes in Tuesday to get his schedule. So super proud of him on that. And then, but with that, Rich, where I'm heading with this is that for the young men and women that are going into the service like that. And what advice do you have so that, because you know, I'll just say these for words. I mean, it's like you're living the dream. You had the career in the fire service. You married a saint. You have four wonderful children. You know, you have that beautiful, as I call it, I have a tagline on underneath my logo on a lot of my stuff. It says, creating success at work and home. And I think that's the challenge in today's fast-paced environments, that is that a lot of times people think that they need to choose, well, am I going to be successful at work or am I going to be successful with my family? And I'm saying you can be successful at both. You know, don't believe the myth. You're a prime example of that. But I wanted to open the floor to you a little bit to just say, you know, what advice do you have for the young people coming in? You know, he's got a girlfriend, but you know, not married, not starting a family yet, but how do you keep your eye on the ball so you know you're doing the right things all the time with that?
I think the key to that is being in the moment, wherever it is that you are at the moment. So if you're with your significant other, don't be listening to the fire scanner of a call or watching fire videos on YouTube while you're with a person whose interests may not be in that vein. Be all in with who you're with and where you're at. Just, you know, for those that are like super all into work, you wouldn't be at work in the middle of a conversation around the kitchen table watching YouTube videos of your kids while you're at work. When you're at work, you're at work and your focus is on work. And the same should be when you're at home. When mm-hmm. you're at home, make your focus to be on the home life. If you had to think of it as just that we have these different cells or boxes that make up the aspects of our life. You know, there's, you know, family, work, spiritual, physical wellness, hobbies. Mm-hmm. Just be all in to whatever box you're in at that time. And I won't say that I was always really good at this. I'm much better now. As you get older, you get wiser. You're able to look back and see where you weren't the person that you would have wanted to be. So this is kind of like, this is old man wisdom being shared to maybe the younger version of me and the, you know, to your son and others who are in that, you know, rowing that boat now, is to be all in, completely committed to whatever your priority or passion or situation is at that moment. But when that isn't the situation that you're in and it shifts, you know, like from work to home, then be all in to that moment. Like I give you a great example, and I'd like to think that I have done pretty good at raising my kids. And so I was visiting my son, who's the firefighter in Madison, and there's an app that you can get where you can listen to the radio traffic of different fire departments, you know, just listen to their dispatch and the calls and such. And I was down visiting with him, and he was off work, and we're at his house, and you know, he's got two little ones running around, and an alert come in for a structure fire in Madison. So I turned on the scanner app and I was listening to see if it was a working fire, and it was a working fire. And I said, Cameron, Madison's got a working fire. And he said, that's nice. And he just kept playing with his kids. And I thought, he's got it right.
Good deal.
That's the right priority to say, well, I'm not there. I'm not going to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
The time that I would spend listening to that is time taken away from the moment of where I'm at.
Yeah.
So I would say be in the moment, be all in to those that are most important to you in the moment of where you are. So at work, that's the people you work with. At home, that's the people that you're surrounded with at home. And to keep, try very hard, and I know it's hard. It's easier, real easy for me to say and harder to do, is to keep a balanced perspective that that the work is not everything. Just think of it as scales, and the scales have to maintain some balance. And if the scales get way out of balance, then someone suffers. Whoever is on the lightest end of the scale, getting the least amount of your attention or consideration, is going to suffer, be that work or be that home. And to always keep in mind that it's a matter of balancing the priorities and the perspectives. And there are people who are way, way out of balance. I interviewed somebody, Donnie, I have a podcast show on situational awareness, and I interviewed somebody who was like super, super, super gung-ho into the job.
Mm-hmm.
And before we hit the record button, I was talking with him, just like you and I were talking before you hit the record button, just kind of getting some backstory and stuff. And he was talking about his level of commitment and love for the job, and the fact that he was saying it, every structure fire, he's going inside to save people. And I said, well, isn't there sometimes when the conditions just aren't right to go inside, that the fire's just too far along? And he's like, no, that's BS. He said, we're going in every time because they're, they, meaning the potential person in there, they deserve us going in and trying to save them. And I said, well, but sometimes the conditions are such that if you went in, you would die. And he said, well, I'm okay with that because I tried to save them and I'm here for them. And I said, what's your family think about that perspective? And he said, and I will almost quote this, and we weren't recording, thank God we weren't. He said, well, let's just say my family isn't my number one priority.
Wow. Yeah.
I know. And I will tell you, Donnie, when I hit the record button, that was a very painful interview to conduct.
Yeah.
Because I knew this person had revealed their mindset and their priorities, which ran so counter to my most inner beliefs that it was one of the most painful interviews that I'd ever done. And as much as I tried to veer away from having anything on the recorded show go anywhere close to that conversation, he took it there. He was proud of it. He took it in the direction that I didn't want to take it. And there were times in the interview where there's these long periods of silence because I just didn't know what to say.
Wow.
I was at a loss for words, because I back to the mind convinced against its will, I knew there wasn't anything that I was going to say to get him to believe that family is an important part of the equation of balance in life. And man, this dude is way out of balance, way out. And the problem is he's got a following of people in the fire service who just think that he is like the, best thing since peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, because he's there for them. And he's so out of balance about who them are that he should be there for. And maybe he openly says that kind of thing to other responders, and they just love hearing that, like family is a distant priority in my life and importance. And it's like, well, you might think that now, but at some point you're going to be 40, lonely, bad knees, an achy back, and you're not going to have you know, anyone, you're not going to have anything in your life other than a job that is just worn you down to nothing.
Yeah. Lost your, you'll lose your spouse.
You're probably gonna learn to, yeah.
You lose your children. You'll have, you know, strange relationships with them. I know. And that's it's that regret, right? One of my lines in my workshop is that I'm here to teach you and help you live with no new regrets. You know, it's try to get people to I'm trying to reach them to get them to change that mind. Like, and I do it through a lot of reflection exercises to get people to pause and reflect, which is a lost art most of the time in our culture today. But when you can get people to do that, like just exactly like what you think about. That's why I loved your situational awareness so much. Is that it's like, you know, the understand your current reality, you pause on it, you perceive it, understand it, and then you predict the future. It's like, you know, if you can try to reach that person and say, okay, let's predict the future. You know, you're always putting your family second, your kids second, you know, always. How do you think that future is going? What's the prediction there? Or if you don't put your health, you know, first, you know, like we talked at the beginning of the show about, it seems selfish to put that first. But so many times, one of my openings too, is that I talk about, you know, all of you, you've taken an oath to serve and protect your communities, but sometimes you fail to recognize that you and your family are a part of that community. You know, and that.
Yeah, I would love to see the oath that first responders take. I would love to see that oath say that service to self and service to family is first. And then service to others is second, because you have to have that strong foundation of service to self and family to be strong mentally, physically, spiritually, to be in good service to others. Yeah. And it's not part of the oath, but I wish it would be, because there are plenty who take that oath and think, well, I've got this sworn oath, and my number one priority is others. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with being in service of others. I spent my whole life in service of others. But when you fall out of service to yourself, service to your family, service to your God, then you're not going to be as strong of a person as those others that you're serving, that they need you to be.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, hey, as wrapping this up, Rich, is there anything that I did not ask you or anything that you'd have liked to spend a little bit more time on in this podcast?
I don't think so. I mean, when we talked about, you know, getting on and doing the podcast, you know, I thought to myself, I'm not sure exactly that my topic is necessarily aligns with your mission, because I'm predominantly focused on situational awareness and high risk decision making in the moment at incidents where, you know, you got to make a quick decision, get it right, or someone's going to get hurt or killed. But over the course of our conversation, I now much more clearly see and appreciate the interconnectedness and the importance of situational awareness in the broader application of life and wellness and balance. So you have opened my eyes to see that there is much more to this to be applied on a much broader perspective. And for that, I thank you for that, because you've got my mind just spinning now of the broader connectivity. Because even in my classes, I don't really speak to that explicitly. However, I have had a number of people come up to me on break or send me an email later on and say, this message was as valuable to me in my home life as it is as a first responder. But I never really dug deep with them to say, well, what does that mean? Or I usually just reply and say, well, good, I'm glad you got, you know, some benefit from the program. But now I see from having learned from you how valuable this is to the broader perspective of wellness and mindset. It's fascinating to me to see this from this angle.
Oh, well, I'm glad. I'm glad you had that good experience very much. And in wrapping this up, before I toss it, I'm going to toss one more thing over to you, but I did want to say is that I sincerely appreciate you taking the time and being on the show. Cause I know, I mean, you've got a lot going on and you know, all that you're doing, and I appreciate when I reached out to you on an email and, you know, you responded back. I absolutely, I sort of had an idea of the type of man you were before I even really talked to you. So
yeah,
I wanted to let you know, I appreciate you. And with with wrapping up the show, Dr. Rich Gassaway, is that one thing that I offer my guests if you'd like to close the podcast out with sort of a final blessing to first responders out there.
Oh, wow. Thank you for that opportunity.
Yes.
Dear Heavenly Father, we come to you in humbleness and thank you for giving us the opportunity to be in service of others, to be the representative of you here on earth, to build our likeness in the likeness of your Son, our Lord Jesus Christ, who spent his life in the service, the humble service of others. May we emulate his teachings. May we be of humble service to others. May you watch over us, bless us, keep us safe. Help us to make good decisions. Help us to be in service to our families, as well as to be in service to strangers in their greatest time of need. We pray this in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balanced program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.